Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, this evening, of course, we have a very special guest. We have Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about our Constitution. Now, I think most people are very concerned about what's going on in the Middle East today, and we just heard a few moments ago that they're going to be moving new brigades of troops into Kuwait with the idea of shifting them into Iraq, because we've got to build up our forces and sending in more men before we can pull our men out. The only trouble is that I do not believe that the plan is ever to pull our troops out. We will always keep troops in Iraq, just as we still have troops in Germany. 60 years after the Second World War ended, we still have troops in Japan. 60 years after the Second World War ended, we still have troops in South Korea. 50 years after the Vietnam War ended, and we, after all, you honestly didn't think that we really went into Iraq and Afghanistan either to get Osama bin Laden or simply to take certainly Saddam Hussein out of power. We went in there to occupy those countries because we wanted a permanent base there. And if you doubt that, you have to read the report put out by the Project for the New American Century. You can find it at their website, newamericancentury.org, and of course the item would be Rebuilding America's Defenses, and if you read it through, you'll find out the plan is to keep our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East, even if Saddam Hussein has gotten rid of. If you want to verify that fact, you can call me. I'll send you the page out of the project's website. Project American Century is a CFR front. They speak for the elite who rule the country and control both political parties. But while our attention is focused on what's going on over in the Middle East, we're losing our freedom here at home. Because we're not abiding by the Constitution, we wouldn't be in the mess we are if we had people who were abiding and obeying the Constitution they've sworn to uphold and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And one of the biggest problems is most Americans don't understand our Constitution. Which is why we have Pastor David Whitney with us every month. Now, admittedly, the Institute supports us, but we support them. We believe that their message is vital to the survival of this nation. And if we don't get back to our constitutional concepts of individual freedom under God, then America as we know it will soon become simply a remembrance of things past. And with that, as the background, Pastor David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us again.
You're welcome, Dr. Stan. It's a blessing to be on your show, and you're absolutely right. We are in a situation where the lawbreakers, really those who are violating the law of the land, the supreme law of the land is the Constitution, the lawbreakers are the ones in power. And what people don't understand, I think, is that the Constitution itself is not a self-enforcing document. That means if someone breaks the law, which is our Constitution, there's no constitutional police to run around and arrest them and put them in prison for breaking the supreme law of the land. The only way this document can be enforced is if we, the people, understand it, and then we hold our elected officials accountable to the standard of our Constitution. If we don't do that, as you said, we're going to lose all of our God-given rights and liberties that this document is designed to secure.
Amen to that. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney as we continue exploring the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights was added to our Constitution to limit the power of the government over the lives of the people. Liberty and limited government are synonymous. Tyranny and total government are synonymous. Which way do you think we're headed today? Towards liberty or towards tyranny? Well, David, you pick up the story.
Well, last time we were together, we looked at the First Amendment, which is first because of its supreme importance. That is, we have the freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, specifically freedom to exercise our Christian faith, and the federal government has no jurisdiction to restrict the free exercise of our religion. And that is the groundwork. If you don't have that freedom, you don't have any significant freedom whatsoever. The Second Amendment is very important because it is really the security for all the other amendments. I have a bumper sticker someone gave me a while back that said, the Second Amendment, it secures the rest. That is, it is the final check, so to speak, upon government tyranny. As you mentioned earlier, the Bill of Rights was crafted, specifically crafted to set a high and impregnable wall around our federal government saying, this far you can come and no further. This restricts your powers. This restricts your ability to do certain things. And these 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, lay out those restrictions very clearly on the federal government. And those restrictions, however, only work if the people who are to enforce those restrictions enforce them. Because certainly those who are in power often are drawn to that position of power because they want power. And they want more power. So they're going to extend the reach of their power as far as anyone permits them. That's one of the laws someone drafted, the laws of tyranny, that wherever there is power, someone's going to use it, and they're going to expand it as far as they can until they meet resistance. Well, the Bill of Rights was designed to draw that wall around our federal government, very specifically saying, thus far you can come and no farther. What happens when the government breaks that law? What happens when it conspires together to undermine our Constitution, as it currently is doing? Evidence is very clear, both the Congress and the President and the Executive Branch, all together with the Supreme Court, have undermined our Constitution severely and violated specific parts of our Constitution, and it seems like they've gotten away with it. And they've done so because the American people do not understand this document nor understand what it is designed to do to restrict our federal government. Well, the text of the Second Amendment is very plain and very simple. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And that final phrase, shall not be infringed, is one of the strongest expressions in our entire Constitution.
Hold that right there, Rick. Well, I understand Pastor Whitney is saying that in the Second Amendment, that phrase, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, that is the concluding statement of our Second Amendment. And David was saying it is one of the strongest statements. It's not equivocal. It's not maybe the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, which means that every federal law dealing with firearms is unconstitutional. Well, but what about this? Don't we have to stop all these unnecessary killings? And if we just restricted guns, why? The federal government has nothing to do with anything to do with federal arms, with the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Now, those who would declare a dictatorship want to disarm the people, and in every dictatorship, whether it was Chairman Mao or Stalin, or whether it was Adolf Hitler, or whether it was in Rwanda, before they slaughtered the Christians there, they had to disarm the people. But here in America, it says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. David, please pick that up.
And this strong, strong statement was clearly understood by our founders, and a little later we'll give some quotations from them to indicate exactly what they understood by these words. I mean, these words are very plain on the paper, but the amazing thing is that the nefarious ones who want to undermine our Constitution have a very successful program underway in America today, and that is to distort the very plain meaning of these words. And they've done this in a number of ways. They've done it legally. On the popular level, they have barraged us with news media and entertainment that basically communicates guns are terrible in the hands of the average citizen. They're dangerous. The children get hurt by them, and murders take place, and suicides, and on and on and on the mantra goes. If you have any exposure to the media, whether it's television, news, or even just programming, magazines, newspapers, anywhere you go, you're going to hear a continual message. And because many people's critical thinking skills are a little bit impaired, they're not thinking critically about this message. They're just hearing all these sob stories about this person with handgun violence and this person murdered and that, you know. All of that contributes to a sense that guns are a threat to our safety as people. Combined with that message, that propaganda message that is very, very well promoted in our society, is the misinterpretation and the actual twisting, 180-degree twisting, of the words of the Second Amendment. And this is known as, in the legal field, as the collectivist view of the Second Amendment. And this view would say, well, the Second Amendment only protects the right of the people collectively to bear arms by, for example, the state maintaining a National Guard or state maintaining its police force. So collectively, sure, collectively the people have this right to keep and bear arms, but individually they do not have any right to keep and bear arms. And so this view would say that the Second Amendment does not protect an individual's right. It only protects the collectivist, the society, ultimately the state's right to keep and bear arms. And, of course, they would say that the reason that interpretation is the correct interpretation is that the militia is mentioned right at the beginning, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Well, first let's consider what the Bill of Rights is. It is a document to specify specific individual rights. If you were to take this collectivist view of the Bill of Rights, and if you're going to do this in the Second Amendment, you've got to do it to all the amendments. So take that collectivist view and let's back it up and apply it to, oh, say, the First Amendment. Think about that. The First Amendment, if you were to collectivist view of interpreting the First Amendment, just take one phrase out of the First Amendment. Say, the phrase of that you have the freedom of press. Well, is it the individual that has the freedom of press, or is it the collective that has the freedom of the press? Well, if the collectivist view is true for the Second Amendment, it must also be true for the First Amendment, and then the collectivist view of the First Amendment would say, collectively the people have the right to a free press, but individually no one has the right to print, publish, or whatever, anything. They do not have freedom of press individually, only collectively. Well, we know what that means. That means ultimately it's the state and the state alone that has the right to print anything whatsoever. It's the state that can run the newspapers. It's the state that runs the magazines and the book printing, and all the publications that come out have to be approved by the state. That's the collectivist view. You think about that for a minute, you recognize very quickly that's communist view. That's what they had in USSR, where the state published all the newspapers and all the books and everything. There was no freedom of the press. We know, obviously, that is not freedom of the press. There's no freedom of the press whatsoever unless the individual has freedom of the press, that the individual can publish a newsletter, publish a newspaper, a book, whatever they would like to publish. They are free to publish that. And that if the individual doesn't have that right, you have no freedom of the press. Of course, we know today most of our press, 99% of the mainstream media, is all controlled, and it's not printing the truth. And so that's why I'm so thankful for shows like yours, Dr. Stan, getting the truth out. And the Internet is another means for getting the truth out, to get around the control that the one-worlders have gained of most media outlets. But so it's obvious, if you just look at the Bill of Rights as a whole, the collectivist view was never intended to be what the meaning of any of these Bill of Rights are about. Certainly not the First Amendment, and obviously not the Second Amendment. If the people individually do not have the right to keep and bear arms, we have no right to protect ourselves from domestic tyranny on the part of our government, or protect ourselves from invasion of a foreign country, or even personal invasion of a criminal who would break into our home. Well, the second aspect of this argument that needs to be defeated is the meaning of militia. Again, these collectivists want to argue that, oh, it's obvious, it's plainly obvious, because the mention here is of a militia, that the only reason individuals would be given the right to have guns at all is that those individuals are part of the army, part of the National Guard or whatever. Well, the word militia has come under widespread attack in our day, and actually the original meaning of the militia has been redefined. Those who seek to undermine and destroy our Constitution have come up with a new term to replace the term militia that is constitutionally used, and that new term you're probably familiar with. You have heard it as the National Guard. You know, Maryland has a National Guard, Virginia has a National Guard, California has a National Guard. You see, that used to be, it's Maryland's militia, Virginia's militia, California's militia. And the militia is not just what we have known today as the National Guard or as a state police force. To understand what the word militia means, we've got to travel back in time, so to speak, linguistically. We've got to go back to understand what it meant to those who penned this Second Amendment. The best way to understand that is to go to the very first American dictionary of the English language, or English dictionaries of the English language, but the very first American dictionary was Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary. And Noah's, you know, a founding educator, a very influential man in the founding of our country, and he recognized that English words versus American English, there was differences in meaning, and so he set out in this huge project to write the first American dictionary, and he completed in 1828. His definition of the militia is what our founders would have understood if they were writing that dictionary, and this is what they meant in the Second Amendment. The militia of a country, Noah Webster's dictionary, 1828, says, the militia of a country are the able-bodied men organized into companies, regiments, and brigades, with officers of all grades, and required by law to attend military exercise on certain days only, but at other times left to pursue their usual occupations. Now here you see that the militia is every law-abiding man of that community, of that state. It's not a select group that have signed up to join the National Guard or something like that. It's all men. And these men are not professional soldiers. They're professional shopkeepers and blacksmiths and so on. They have other jobs and occupations, and they nonetheless are called upon in a time of crisis, in a time of invasion, to defend their state. And so this militia is all law-abiding, able-bodied men. And yes, they need to drill regularly to do military exercises and so on so that they are prepared to fight if need be. That has changed dramatically in our day. Today we've got the professional soldier. We have the standing army, something our founding fathers abhorred. They abhorred so clearly that, you know, when we studied the executive branch looking at Article 2 of the Constitution, it's very clear that they were doing everything they could to prevent standing army in America. Every 2 years, another authorization would have to be given, and 2 years was significant because that's when the congressmen, every 2 years, they stand for re-election. Therefore, if the people were not in favor of a congressional action, a declaration of war, it would be the people would have a voice in saying, wait a minute, we don't like what our congressman has done, and so on. So the militia, we need to understand, was under the control of the state, specifically the executive branch of each state. So the governor of the state was the head of the militia. He was the one that was in charge of them, and they only became federalized, that is, called up to national service, if there was a declaration of war by the Constitution. As you know, the last constitutionally declared war was World War II. Everything since then has been unconstitutional military actions in our country.
Well, we're going to have to take a break here in just a minute, but I would simply point out that why do we have such a big army? Why, it's to defend us from the wicked communists who were financed from their very inception by people here in the United States. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or Professor Sutton's book, you need to understand. We financed communism because we needed an enemy. Well, David, you go right ahead.
And the idea of this militia, that every able-bodied, law-abiding male was part of the militia, is something that actually reaches way back in English history and in English law. The first recorded instance of this goes all the way back to Alfred the Great, who reigned in the AD 871 to 899, and the English law of that day required all able-bodied men to purchase weapons, their own weapons, and to be available for military duty. And so the idea of the militia has ancient history and very clearly was the system our founders intended, not a volunteer army, which is what we're told we have today, not a professional army, which is what we supposedly have today, but a militia. And the militia were under the control of the governor of each state. I recall an example recently that's sort of humorous, actually, if it wasn't so tragic. The governor of Alabama, years back, Fob James, was very supportive of Judge Roy Moore keeping the Ten Commandments in the courthouse because they are the foundation of law. And he was being threatened, the governor and the state and so forth, were being threatened by the federals, saying, oh, you got to remove the Ten Commandments, you can't do that, this is all that kind of garbage. And Fob James said, fine, you can issue your decree that these Ten Commandments have to be moved, but you come down here and do it yourself. And if you attempt to do it with federal marshals or what have you, we will meet you at the borders of Alabama with the state militia. You see, that is a governor who understood his role to stand against tyranny on the federal level, and that he could use the militia because the militia was sworn to uphold the law and defend the Constitution against all enemies, both foreign, and foreign invasion, and domestic.
Well, I think what's so interesting about that, David, as you know, with the recent action here, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, now the president has the right to take the National Guard away from the individual state governors without their consent,
mm-hmm.
and mobilize them and use them against the people of that state or against the people of other states. Traditionally, you had to have the state governor's permission. We've abandoned that philosophy. And with the new legislation, the frightening legislation, which most people don't even understand, the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, we have the very makings of a military dictatorship in America. In fact, certainly even Liberal Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont has said this legislation actually encourages the President of the United States to establish a defense, basically a military or martial law throughout the United States. Where is the... Did you read that in your local newspaper? No, you're not going to hear that discussed on regular television or regular radio. Why? We are moving rapidly towards a dictatorship here. There are people who want a dictatorship in here. There are people who are using the threat of terrorism to justify establishing a dictatorship. And the average American has no idea what's happening. And it all gets back to the point where we do not understand or enforce the Constitution, which is the very foundation of our freedom and the only protection we have against tyranny. Go ahead, David.
And that's exactly what our founders knew was the danger of giving that kind of power to the president. That's why there were several checks on the presidential power as commander-in-chief. First, there had to be a declaration of war by Congress.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David was just saying that before the president could even begin to mobilize the army, there had to be a declaration of war by Congress. The president couldn't just decide, well, I'm going to go ahead and invade Afghanistan, then I think I'll invade, Iraq. No, there had to be a declaration of war. You couldn't say, well, we authorize it. You had to declare war. We don't declare war anymore. Simply, these are just police actions. As America expands its empire throughout the world. And that's what it's all about. They don't want to admit that, but that's what it's all about. Go ahead, David.
And so they structured this to prevent the president from having those kind of dictatorial powers. Congress was a check on his power as the commander-in-chief. The governors, as you've already mentioned, they were also a check upon his power as commander-in-chief. He couldn't call up those troops unless Congress had approved it. And unless Congress reapproved it every 2 years, the war could not continue. So all of these structures, all of these checks and balances were built into the system. And those people, when they think of checks and balances, only think of the three branches of government, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. But our founders designed four levels of government to also be a check upon the power of the federal government, the state government, and then the county government, and then the local government down to the town or township, depending on, each state having some variation there. But each of those levels of government was a check upon the other. Specifically, the states were to be the largest check upon the federal government's power. And so governors were, in a sense, as powerful as the president. That's why they had a militia at their disposal if they needed to defend their state from invasion and so on. But as you mentioned, this has all been broken down, and the American people largely are asleep, not aware that our rights are being stolen from us, and a dictatorship is the noose of a dictatorship has already been laid around the neck of the American people and the American Republic. And all that waits now, like you say, is an executive order to say, oh, we got a national emergency. What is it, bird flu today, or who knows what tomorrow? And, oh, we've got to use troops to remove people from their homes, take their guns out of their hands, and so on and so forth, like they did in Katrina. That is an illustration of what these people intend to do, because they know they cannot dominate and they cannot accomplish their dictatorial aims without taking the guns out of the hands of the American people. I think Katrina is a very sobering warning. The people there were defending their own property. People there were law-abiding citizens, and they had no other defense. They didn't have any police to protect their property. And as soon as the guns were taken out of their hands by U.S. troops who did this, as soon as the guns were taken out of their hands, the looters and the evil ones came and destroyed their property and did great damage. But it illustrates, again, this principle. The best defense is a well-armed, law-abiding militia. The people protecting their property and the people protecting their God-given rights. So if the Second Amendment was only to protect collective rights of the state to maintain a police force, it's completely inappropriate to have it in the Bill of Rights altogether, because the Bill of Rights is designed to protect individual rights. Now, our framers saw that individual ownership of firearms was a protection against both foreign invasion, armies marching across your border, or as we have on our southern border today, an illegal swarm invading across that border. And I fear for those who live in those border states or those border areas, because their lives are not in safe condition with the invasion, which it really is an invasion of illegals coming across. And the third thing that it was to protect us from, our framers saw that individual ownership of firearms was a protection against the tyranny of our own government. They had experienced this themselves. If you've ever traveled to Williamsburg, be sure you go and visit the magazine that is where, in the town of Williamsburg, the gunpowder was stored and the bullets were stored and armaments were stored. Well, one of the lead-ups to our war for independence was an action that took place on the part of the governor of Virginia. And, by the way, the capital was Williamsburg at that time. So the governor, at the behest of the king, ordered that all the arms in the city of Williamsburg be taken captive and be put on board ship, be basically taken from the people of Williamsburg. The people of Williamsburg were forcibly disarmed prior to the Revolution. And after the break, we'll talk about what the upshot of that was, but it's an illustration of what happens when tyrants want to reign. They take the guns of the people.
And I think we have to realize there's a coordinated, organized effort to disarm the American people using all sorts of excuses. None of them are real. The real reason that our liberal senators and our liberal congressmen and our liberal people working in government want to disarm the people is to enslave them. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. Go ahead, David.
Well, the story there in Williamsburg is fascinating because the people, when they're disarmed, what do they have? They have nothing to defend themselves against. Who? Against the army. In other words, their own government, which in that case was the British government, their own government had become their worst enemy. Well, they had one hero, though, Patrick Henry, and he rode out into the hills of the forest surrounding Williamsburg, and he raised an army of people who had weapons. And they marched on Williamsburg in mass with weapons ready to fight. And they caused the governor of Williamsburg to back down. And the governor called the armaments back from the ship, and the arms were returned to the magazine there in Williamsburg. And the people rejoiced because there was an armed militia. The armed militia that Patrick Henry raised in the surrounding hills and outlying areas that came into Williamsburg to defend their God-given rights to keep and bear arms. And so our founders saw that this is an example of what happens when you allow government to violate this principle. The only result will be is tyranny. Who would want to take the guns from law-abiding citizens? Now, you've been lied to, most of us have been lied to so successfully that we think, yeah, you know, gun control legislation, that's a pretty good thing, and, you know, we've got too many criminals running around with guns, and we need to confiscate all the guns so that we'll be safe. Well, the exact opposite is actually true. If the law-abiding citizen does not have a gun in his possession, he's in danger, far more danger than if he does have a gun. But we've been lied to, and they're trying to persuade us, you're far less safe having a gun in your house. Oh, the kids may get a hold of it, or that somebody may try to commit suicide, or all these scare tactics are given to try to persuade the American people to give up their guns. We should never, ever do it. We should not allow it to take place, because once we do, I mean the situation those people in Williamsburg were in, the government tyrants can do whatever they please if we are not armed against their tyranny.
And I should just point out, it was just 12 years ago in Rwanda, 1994, with the full support of your government, which refused to allow the United Nations troops who were there to guard the people. First of all, they disarmed the people so they had no weapons. And then, of course, when the Hutus went on the rampage, they simply hacked 800,000 Christians to death. While Bill Clinton was saying to his members of his staff, don't use the word genocide, because if you mentioned genocide, then we'd have to intervene. And our leaders intentionally condemned those people to a brutal death. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution is our guest this evening. And David, before we go on, I want you to give your telephone number. I want you to tell our listeners about the Institute of the Constitution. I want you to tell them about your program that you have and about your website.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, Institute on the Constitution is devoted to teaching people the Christian history and heritage of our country, teaching them a working knowledge of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights, which actually, that knowledge is essential for you to function as a citizen. That's what our founders obviously designed it as. If you don't know those documents, you cannot do your job as a citizen. You cannot enforce these documents for your government. And really, as I mentioned earlier, the Constitution is not a self-enforcing document. We do not have a government that's on autopilot. It takes we the people constantly vigilant for our liberties, defending ourselves against all enemies, foreign and especially domestic enemies, which we have a swarm, a whole hornet's nest of domestic enemies today. And therefore, for the citizen to know the Constitution, the Declaration of the Bill of Rights, is absolutely essential. So we put together what we call a host kit, a way by which anyone with any group of people can very simply communicate these truths. We don't say you're teaching the Constitution, because you're just using a series of video lectures that Dr. Eidsmo has done. He's a constitutional law professor, a solid Christian who presents the Christian Foundation for Law and Government, explains the philosophy of government of our founders, which was a biblical worldview of law and government. And in 12 lectures, half-hour lectures, He lays it all out and gives the student a working knowledge of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. And this is so essential because we have lost so much of our liberty and our freedoms today because Americans don't know this document, and you won't be taught it in most public, not most, all public schools. They won't teach this. Law schools do not teach this, which means most lawyers trained, and by the way, most people in leadership positions in government today are lawyers, and they have been trained in the false view of law and government, and they have not studied the original meaning of the Constitution, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights. They're ignorant, therefore they're useful tools on the part of the one-worlders to accomplish their ends and steal our freedom. But this host kit is easily available for anybody to communicate these truths. We are so encouraged as we see churches all over America teaching this to their congregations, equipping their congregation to be Christian citizens doing their God-given duty. People can call us toll-free to order a host kit by calling our toll-free number, 866-730-9796. That number again is 866-730-9796. Or if they'd like to go to our web store, it's on our website. They can order it online. And our website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. There's other resources there available in our web store that can help a citizen prepare to defend and restore our republic. If you look at what's taken place in the past 50 years of the destruction of our republic and therefore the destruction of our God-given rights, it's astonishing what the evil ones have accomplished in those 50 years. We can recover and restore our republic. We can reclaim our God-given rights. But the first thing that's got to happen is we've got to educate ourselves about our founding documents, and then we need to educate a circle of people around us, our family, especially our children, the next generation. They need to be educated on these things. And our churches, we need to take this course into our churches and offer it as a class. It's designed actually to function as a Sunday school class, but it can also function as a class in the middle of the week. Many different ways. We have people creatively doing this. I was just talking with someone today out in California who is doing it in a nursing home setting, or retirement home setting. Excuse me, not nursing home, but retirement home setting. He said there was an amazing experience he had of a high school history teacher who taught history for 25 years in high school. And she took the course as a senior citizen now, and she is shocked that she was successfully lied to all those years, which means she taught the children in her classes the same lie that she had been taught.
Well, I think it's so important, David, that people understand that freedom is not free. I mean, if we expect to be have the luxury and privilege of living in a free society, then we have to be involved. And the difficulty is the wicked people have been working within our universities and with our churches, and certainly at every level of our society, the great tax-exempt foundations, and withholding the truth about our marvelous Constitution from successive generations of our people. The history is here, the Constitution is there, but they don't even teach it in our law schools today. Why? Because these people hate the Constitution because it limits their ability to establish a dictatorship. There have always been those who wanted to establish a dictatorship, not only here but throughout the world. And the Constitution got in the way. In fact, Richard Gardner, back in 1974, writing in the April issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, talked about the necessity of making an end run around the Constitution, because it simply had gotten in the way of their efforts to establish their authoritarian society. Richard Gardner, a later appointed ambassador to Spain by the Clinton administration. But you could go back and certainly check these things out. They're true. People have to understand that if we expect to be free, we're going to have to be involved, because tyranny like hell is not easily conquered. And we're moving rapidly towards a tyrannical government. And once that tyranny is established, it will never be removed in our lifetime. That's why this program that David and the Institute of the Constitution are encouraging you to learn is so vitally important. Please go ahead, David.
And so the Second Amendment being one illustration of that, if the false view of the Second Amendment is accepted by most Americans, they're going to let the government come and steal their guns. Consider what George Washington said about firearms. And by the way, this is kind of quotation you'll never hear in the public press, because they don't want you to know what our founders believed about firearms. George Washington said, "Firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself." Wow, how much stronger can you get than that? Firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself. They are the American people's liberty teeth and keystone under independence to secure peace, security, and happiness. The rifle and the pistol are equally indispensable. The very atmosphere of firearms everywhere restrains evil interference. They deserve a place of honor with all that is good. Consider what George Washington is saying here. The very atmosphere of firearms restrains evil, and it deserves a place of honor among all that is good. What do we hear today? The exact opposite. Oh, firearms are evil, and these deserve a place of dishonor. As a matter of fact, we need to take them out of people's hands, because we will have far less evil in our society if we don't have guns in the hands of citizens. And George Washington said the exact opposite of that. You know, the logic that is propelling this gun-grabbing movement is easy to defeat if people would just think about it. Many people are murdered by other weapons than guns. How about a knife? Even just a simple kitchen knife. It's used to kill many, many people. Well, are the manufacturers of knives being sued because their knife has been used to kill someone? No, you never hear such crazy things as the manufacturers of guns being sued because their gun has been used to kill someone. Is there a ban being called for all knives? Let's take all the kitchen knives out of people's hands and nobody can have a knife in their kitchen anymore. You know, knives are dangerous. No, you don't hear any craziness like that. But we're persuaded that this guns are the real problem. Box cutters are fine. You know, people can have box cutters in their homes, and they can even carry box cutters down the street, but don't let them get a gun and carry it. And yet the evidence is exactly the opposite, if you were honestly to examine it. For example, Washington, D.C., just 45 miles from here, is the most dangerous city in America, the murder capital of the USA, and yet it has the most stringent and strict gun control laws of any city in our country. And so, in spite of all the gun control laws, murder by handguns is skyrocketing there. Why? Because the law-abiding citizen is the only one who's going to abide by the law that says he can't have a gun. The criminal's not going to pay any attention to that whatsoever. And so the criminal now knows, hey, I'm pretty safe here, you know? I've got the gun, and nobody else does. If the criminal walked into the McDonald's planning to shoot the place up and kill as many people as he could, and he knew that everybody in that place had a gun, he wouldn't even begin to attempt it. It's only because he knows it's a gun-free zone that he feels free to go in there and begin to massacre the people wholesale. If he knew that the first time he pulls out his gun, 50 guns are going to be pointed at him, he wouldn't even dare try it.
And so I would say the same thing on some of our schoolyards. Some of our schools are simply open shooting galleries, because anybody who goes onto a schoolyard with a weapon, whether it's a student or an adult, knows that the federal law prohibits any guns even within 1,000 feet there, so there can be no opposition to somebody with a gun. If he knew that the principal and some of the teachers had weapons, they would be very loath to start shooting, because the one thing these cowards fear is they're going to get shot in return.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, Samuel Adams, another very famous founder, often called the father of the American Revolution, he said the Constitution shall never, you can underline that word, the Constitution shall never be construed to prevent the people of the United States who are peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. Well, here's the one who was the great founder in terms of fomenting the move to the American War for Independence, and he said never is the Constitution to be interpreted and construed to keep peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. Thomas Jefferson likewise said, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. None. Noah Webster, who we've quoted earlier on his definition of the militia, he said something very interesting, because we need to remember what we've been talking about several times already. Tyrants love gun control. Hitler loved gun control. What did he do to the Jews? The very first thing he did to the Jews is he took away their guns, because he knew if they didn't have guns, then he could march them off to the death camps, as he did. Noah Webster said, before a standing army or a tyrannical government can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are almost in every kingdom in Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole body of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any band of regular or professional troops that can be, on any pretense, raised in the United States. Very clearly, he was saying that what you need to have with government is you need to have a check against its force. And the only way to check the force of government is to have a superior force. And if every law-abiding citizen is armed, they present a superior force to anyone attempting to become a tyrant in America. Our founders knew that keeping and bearing arms was the best way to prevent tyranny from coming to America. And so the tyrants also know the only way they can achieve their wicked aims is to disarm every single American. And only the police and only the army would have guns, and they then would be able to strip us of all our God-given rights. Well, the Second Amendment is absolutely essential, and it should receive a great deal more attention and be properly interpreted. The Third Amendment, we'll just deal with briefly here, is often just kind of overlooked because it seems almost irrelevant in our day, but it is not irrelevant because the principle that the Third Amendment speaks of is very important. Speaks to a practice of that day of most European nations of quartering troops in people's homes. That is, forcing private citizens to house soldiers in their homes. And this happened during the War for American Independence. It happened in wars before that. And the people saw the terrible deprivations and degradations done by this practice. After all, consider, you know, a family of husband and wife and a few children, maybe young children or whatever. And all of a sudden, they're housing 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 soldiers in their house. All these soldiers are well armed, and they're a powerful force. Who's going to call the shots in that house? Literally, it's going to be the soldiers. No longer will the father be in control of his own household. And the examples in the American War for Independence were that women were raped, even teenage girls were raped in their own homes by the British troops. And as a matter of fact, that there was some suspicion that that was part of British policy in order to terrorize the American citizens into submission. I grew up not far from a town in New Jersey, Pennington, New Jersey, in which one of the worst and most horrific illustrations of this took place, of a rape of almost all the young women in that town during the War for Independence by the British soldiers who were being housed in the homes of those poor citizens of Pennington, New Jersey. And so Our founders knew that we need to protect ourselves against government intrusion into the home. And that is because a man's home is to be his castle. Again, this is a principle that went back into ancient English history. The idea that the king cannot step foot into my castle. Doesn't matter if it's a hovel, doesn't matter if there's holes in the roof, but he has no right to step foot into my castle unless he has a warrant with evidence that I have broken a just law. And so they said that quartering of troops was prohibited in a person's home except if the owner consented. In other words, if the owner said, fine, I'll permit that to take place, because your property was yours. You are sovereign over your land. Again, we know that that whole principle, and that is where this principle very clearly still applies today, that principle is under attack. The New London versus Kelo Supreme Court decision, a wicked decision that basically said a government could come and steal your property if they could get more tax revenue from some other taxpayer, as they did in New London, Connecticut, and they're doing all over America today, stealing people's property. And this is, you know, an issue that is the principle of the Third Amendment applies here. The government doesn't have any right to even set foot onto your property, let alone to steal your property. I am really surprised that Americans haven't been more outraged and forced legislation in all 50 states and in Congress to overturn the Supreme Court. I'm surprised those Supreme Court justices haven't been impeached by this. I know there's a lot of outrage, but the outrage hasn't actually seemed to accomplish anything at this point in time. The tyrants are stealing our property and violating our God-given right to own land and to own our own home.
But, of course, the thing is that, David, people have forgotten what our Constitution is. And the whole idea, and Thomas Jefferson said it so well, and he said, in matters of politics, speak not to me of competence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. In matters of politics, speak not to me of competence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And so we were to limit the power of government to interfere in our lives. Well, we've changed that all. Now they've taken the chains off of government. They're forging them for the people. And the new legislation lays the foundation for a dictatorship and concentration camps in America. Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. Well, one of the things both of these First and Second Amendment illustrate is that the most dangerous enemy that you face, especially today, in our day, as dictatorship and tyranny are growing exponentially, the greatest enemy you face today is your own government. Your own government trying to take your land, your own government trying to take your guns. If you just consider the history of the last century, the 20th century was the bloodiest century in human history, bar none. More people were killed, murdered during the 20th century than ever before in the history of humanity. And who was the prime culprit? Was it a foreign army invading a country that massacred so many people? No, it was the people's own government that repeatedly massacred tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of people. China, a massacre that's been well covered up. We know more about Stalin and his brutal massacre of his own people, and Pol Pot and Idi Amin, and the list goes on and on and on of these bloodthirsty murderers. The people's own government murdering them. The only way you could carry that out, of course, is if the people were defenseless. The people did not have their own weapons. And so we need to guard ourselves against such tyrannical government. And it begins by understanding the original structure, understanding the founders' view of law and government in our Constitution, our Declaration, and our Bill of Rights. Every citizen needs to know this and then take action on it. Only electing someone into office who will uphold these specific God-given rights and will stick to the original intent of the Constitution, Declaration, and Bill of Rights. And we need to put out of office anyone who will not stand up against the tyranny that is growing so rapidly in Washington, D.C., and also in state governments as it's being yielded over to this new world order. There is hope for America, but the hope begins with each listener saying, I'm going to do what I can do, and start by educating myself. I encourage everyone to get a host kit. You can call our toll-free number, 866-730-9796. That toll-free number is 866-730-9796. And begin the process of educating yourself, your family, your church family, your entire community, as many people as you can reach, because that's the hope that we can stop the tyranny and that we can restore our constitutional republic.
Well, David, you're absolutely right, and I just hope and pray that the people out there are taking heed to what you say. And this program is going out all across America, and all across America, people are setting up these institutes of the Constitution and teaching others. Good night, and God bless you.
God bless you, Dr.
Bye bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and once again, if you'd like to get the information on the Institute of the Constitution, why don't you call 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Then let me suggest, if you have not gotten the beautiful book that Pastor Chuck Baldwin has put together on the foundations of our freedom. It's simply the 50 major documents that deal with America, not only the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, but the Mayflower Compact and George Washington's parting address and certainly Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and those great documents that are the very foundation of the freedom that we enjoy here. Foundations of Our Freedom is available from Radio Liberty. It's pretty close to 2 inches thick. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It makes a great gift that the Foundations of Our Freedom. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, for more information on the background of America, John Stormer's wonderful book, Betrayed by the Bench, David Barton's book, Original Intent. You need to study our Constitution. You need to understand it to know what you're in favor of. Now, of course, you know we have a 10-point program on what should be done. The first one is to have a personal relationship with our Lord. The second is to understand the foundations of our freedom. The third is to understand who it is that wants to take away our freedom. That's where my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, comes in. If you have not read it, you really should. Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get the book, the video, or get all three of them together, a book, video, and audio tape, by calling 1-800-544-8927, because you can substitute a DVD for the audio tape. It gives you the understanding of the spiritual forces that are energizing the wicked people in the secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have people in the presidency who belong to a secret society. In fact, both John Kerry and George Bush belonged to the same secret society when they ran against one another in 2004, and neither one of them, of course, talked about the real issues. It was all a dog and pony show. And when Tim Russert asked George Bush about the Skull and Bone Society, he said, it's too secret to discuss. And when Tim Russert asks John Kerry about the Skull and Bone Society, John Kerry said, it's too secret to discuss. Where do you think these men's loyalty is? It's certainly not to America. It is this globalist dream, the New World Order, the New World Religion. When you understand that, you can understand why they, of course, involved us in a war in the Middle East as a great diversion as we lose our freedom here at home. I hope many of you certainly want to get the material that's available through Radio Liberty that you're not going to get elsewhere. Ted Flynn's book, The Hope of the Wicked, goes into the background of this movement even more extensively than my book, much larger, much more detailed. Great book. We certainly support Ted Flynn. He's done a great job. And then for the spiritual aspect of this, let me suggest Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil. Malachi was a Jesuit priest, and then of course we have four interviews with him. We hope you'll get both the four interviews and the book, Hostage to the Devil, and of course you get a special price when you get the two of them together. We hope you'll want to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour videos or DVDs. To understand the spiritual nature of what's going on, and then to understand what really happened on 9-1-1, let me suggest the videos, 9-1-1, Press for the Truth, 9-1-1 Mysteries, the In Plain Sight, Terror Storm by Alex Jones, and The Day That Changed America Forever. They're all available they're all available in DVD. The last one's available in by video, or you can get them all together at a special reduced price. That's the 9-1-1 special. You need to see Building 7 come down. You need to watch Building 7 come down repeatedly. It was, of course, a controlled demolition. If it was, then it means that Iraq and all the people who died there did not have to die at all. Our number 1-800-544-8927. We'll be right back. Dale, this is Dr. Stan today, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Let me simply point out that we are going to be changing our shortwave frequencies for our evening program on the 13th of January, and very shortly after that for the afternoon program. So the evening program after the 13th of January will be 5.755 kilohertz, 5.755 kilohertz. Our afternoon program will be changing sometime about then to 9.480 kilohertz. That's 9.480, and we're going to be on KAIJ shortwave, a 100,000-watt station out of Oklahoma, and hope you'll get good reception there. Please let us know how it's coming through. But anyway, under any circumstances, we will be changing that the 13th of January to 5.755, and then, of course, the afternoon program to 9.480. Well, our special guest this evening is coming from the land where they're having all sorts of terrible storms and floods, and but he was fortunate to be with us tonight. Barry Shamus, is the power back on there yet, Barry?
The phone came back on not 2 minutes ago, and the light's about 15.
All right, fine. Well, the Lord's looking after us. In fact, I got a email today from somebody in upstate New York, just telling me, they thanking me so much for having Barry Shamus on. Now, for those of you who don't know Barry, Barry is a Jewish patriot who's been very, very concerned about what's happening to his country, which is Israel. And Barry has actually, certainly popularized the understanding of the fact that Prime Minister Rabin was actually assassinated by people in his own government, very similar to the assassination of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy here in the United States, and covered up by, of course, the establishment, by the media. But Barry Shamus was able to convince many of the people, probably 40 or 50% of the Israeli people, that the official story of the assassination of Rabin wasn't true. And he's been, of course, on the front lines of trying to awaken the people of Israel that they're being betrayed by their leaders, that their leaders are controlled by members of the Council on Foreign Relations, the same people who are controlling our government, and eventually they're going to betray and destroy Israel. And certainly the Baker Report, which just came out, the Iraq Study Group, is suggesting that we get together, the United States gets together with Iran and Syria to discuss the solution to the problem, and exclude Israel. How can he exclude Israel? Well, that seems to be the intent upon the people who are really running things behind the scenes. We're not the people, of course, who most people think. Anybody who thinks that George Bush makes any of the decisions is incredibly naive. Well, with that as a background, Barry, we were going to talk tonight about your book on UFOs. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm going to talk about the two books, but I want to make an interesting point that happened to me today. You know, Hanukkah, this was the first night of Hanukkah.
Right.
All right, that's what it is tonight. And just, Hanukkah is the holiday of lights. The Jews had defeated, the Maccabees had defeated the Greek, Syrians, and taken over the temple, and they didn't have enough oil to light up the temple. And it turns out in this holiday that one lamp full of oil lasted 8 days. Well, just as Hanukkah was about to begin, all the electricity went out in Burnaby, British Columbia, and I was in the dark. And with seconds to go, I found a couple of candles and sort of prepared myself.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back here.
Oh.
All right, Barry, go right ahead.
Well, that's my Hanukkah. I had a very ironic one Number one yesterday is when I finished up the advertisement for my second book, which is on Lulu.com. It's called Bye Bye Gaza, and we'll get to that. But the first book is the UFO book. Now, it's called Return of the Giants, and I've hidden it. I've hidden it because I wanted Rabin's murderers to stand trial, and my you know, those who don't want to believe me take the UFO book and prove that I'm crazy. And there's a certain Daniel Pipes who uses a really criminal professor named Plut at the University of Haifa to attack me over this UFO book, and he'd been doing it for years.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we can talk about the UFO book. I think we may disagree on UFOs, but I want to know what you think about them. I think other people know what I think, so I always like to ask people to come here and express their views. And, of course, Daniel Pipes is part and parcel of this whole neocon movement, who is part of this ruling elite that, you know, use their position to manipulate the public, and he's doing everything he can to incite a war, you know, certainly with the Islamic world at the present time, and then to discredit anybody, of course, who really tries to get the truth out about what's happening in Israel today.
All right, first of all, what I think about him, I mean, I don't have an opinion. I wrote a book. This was me at my journalistic best. I spent over 2 years writing the book. Israel, by the way, had an enormous wave of UFOs from 1987 to 1999, one of the world's best. And I gathered the videos. I put them on the Internet. I had them analyzed. I gathered material, actual material, had them sent to laboratories. I simply wrote a great book.
Now, basically, you believe that UFOs are real. They're real. They're tangible. You can see them. And they've been seen, really, by millions of people throughout the world.
Well, in Israel, they've been filmed. Every race of UFO has been filmed in Israel. Two UFOs crashing was filmed in Israel. Well, I showed this in conventions all over the world. I showed this from Australia to Brazil to Mexico to Italy to England. I was as much bigger in the UFO world than I ever was from the Rabin world.
Well, tell me, first, are those films still available?
Yeah, well, I don't know about available, but I brought them to America in case I ever need them.
All right,
sure.
Fine. All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment here with Barry Shamish. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Barry Shamish, and he has written a book about UFOs. Now, he has not talked about UFOs. This is a little unusual in some respects, and yet I think that, and I hate to say this, I think UFOs are very important. I think that if you really want to understand what's going on in the world today, you have to understand what they are. Now, I'm going to be very interested to know what Barry's view of these, but Barry was saying that certainly in the 1980s, there were a number of UFO sightings in Israel. They were filmed repeatedly, and they were seen by large numbers of people. What was that, over about a two-year period?
No. 1987 to 1999.
Okay,
let me go through. There was not a period in Israel. There was a massive wave. It was highly publicized in Israel. It was front page news for years.
All right, fine.
One of the facts of Israel that is really not extremely well known. But the important point of my book was that the inhabitants of the UFOs came out and showed themselves. And this, by the way, was the subject of four episodes of the TV show Sightings, which used my material and hired me as an advisor. This was also very well known. In the UFO world, my stuff is very well known. So what happened is that the inhabitants went to four women who didn't know each other around the town of Kadima. And they were all giants. The sightings made these women draw these creatures. They were about 7 feet tall with round faces and barely any nose or barely any lips, silvery clothes. All the women agreed, and all the women had landing circles outside their backyards. And within the landing circles, there were shards of what turned out to be silicone, and there was oil that was highly dosed with cadmium. This was a major, major event. Now, here are a couple of facts you should know. One, all incidents took place on the Shabbat, all of them. Every Friday night, another giant would appear in the area of Kadima, and I got four women to talk. Next, there have been no sightings of giants since David's cousin killed the last one. He was a giant with six fingers and toes. 3,200 years, there have been no sightings of giants in Israel. And now you have them again. Now, look, I read the Old Testament just for this book because I needed to know when giants were spotted in Israel. Giants were spotted between March of 1993 and July of 1993. That's when the giants were spotted. And then, quite frankly, we had the Oslo Accord. They arrived when the Oslo Accord was being written. They left when the Oslo Accord was finished. Now, I don't know if they're Nephilim. They sure sound like Nephilim. The fact is, the utter evil that was going on in Israel brought out these giants. That's my opinion.
All right, for our listeners who do not know what the Nephilim were, they were actually giants who existed in the era of before the Great Flood. They were certainly in the era between Adam and, of course, the Great Flood, which probably was 800 years or so later, somewhere in there. And apparently, there was a very advanced society in the world at that time. And we're told in the Bible that the fallen angels came down and mated with women, and their offspring were known as the Nephilim. And this was a very evil society. It was so evil that God decided to destroy everything. And the only people that were worthy to be preserved were Noah and his family. And so the Nephilim were these giants, that offspring of demonic forces. So pick up the story there.
Well, there were giants after the flood, lots and lots of them. And I spoke to rabbis asking where they came from, and apparently Og of Bashan was a stowaway on Noah's Ark. It doesn't matter, that's in the book. All of this is in the book. The fact remains that all the women were 39 years old, and they had white-collar jobs, and they had similar personalities. These women were dealt with at some time sexually. I don't care to go into that right now. But the fact remains that Israel had an incident that is not recorded in the English language by anyone else but me, and I had to hide it simply because there was a bigger issue at hand, and I don't know about my timing. All I did was write interesting incidents that happened in Israel. The giant book was easily one of my they're all good books, but it was one of my best, and you can get it on Lulu. You just write my name into lulu.com, and out comes Return of the Giants. And I'll tell you something again about this Oslo Accord. The UFOs, if they have any existence in Israel, it's to be bad. It's to be remarkably bad. The women who met these things, all but one, incidentally, and there's one who now prays to crystals and pyramids. All the rest rue the day that this wrecked their lives. These are not creatures with any human emotions. That's putting it kindly. But the fact remains that while Oslo was being written, Israel had a slew of giants landing, and that's what this book is. And by the way, there's nothing wacky about it. When you read the book, you'll see that it's the same journalism that I always write, and it's thoroughly corroborated, and it's a good piece of writing. Now,
well, for our listeners, just let me comment that my good friend Chuck Christmeyer has written a book called Alien Encounters, which is just talking about the many of these encounters between human beings and the UFOs, but documented. There is a professor back at Harvard University who's written about them. He had recorded 5,000 instances of alien abductions. Now, this is Harvard University, and these women all told the same sort of story. And there wasn't always women, sometimes it was men, but there was always or almost always, something of a sexual nature here in these encounters. Does this sound like crazy talk? Well, I think that you have to realize that there is another dimension, and there really are these forces out there, and UFOs are not imaginary. There's been a lot of disinformation about them, but they're real, and I've never heard, of course, the story that Barry's telling him, but I have no question it's correct. Please, Barry, go ahead, tell more.
I'm not redoing the whole book. You got to buy it. But there were many, many peculiar things happening in Israel while peace was being negotiated. Look, I don't know why the Israeli people became stupid. I don't know why Israelis, a proud people, one day woke up and said, you know how we can be stronger? We can give up our country. Don't ask me how that happened, but clearly this is not a people who are thinking very clearly right now. And I wrote a book about, without a doubt, the worst incidents of suicide that has ever taken place in Israel, and that book is called Bye Bye Gaza. It's my brand new book.
All right, fine. So basically, do you want to say anything more about the giants, about the UFOs?
Oh, we can go back to that. Time is short, and I've got two books.
All right, fine. Go ahead then. If you want to talk about Gaza, that's fine.
I would love for you to order the book from Lulu.com, and we'll do a whole show on it.
Is Lulu.com a book on right on demand, or what is it?
Yeah, they take half. And they print the book. I'm in no position to print books. And yesterday, in one day, since I wrote my article on Bye Bye Gaza, 44 books were sold.
Oh, fine. Well, let's go ahead. And now, of course, then Lulu will do your Gaza book, too. So let's go ahead.
They're doing all my books. You can get Shabtai Tzvi there. You can get Save Israel there, Israel Betrayed. They're all there now.
All right, fine. Well, let's go ahead. And let's talk about Bye Bye Gaza, because that's the latest one.
Oh, it's not just the I finally gathered my writing for the last 2 years, where I was obsessed with preventing this so-called evacuation, and everything I wrote came out true, and we're going to talk about that shortly. The fact remains is that the Jews conspired to destroy the Gush Katif. The greatest pioneering experiment in Zionist history that was producing 25% of the produce of Israel on a very 12 square miles of sand dunes, and they just took these people and they threw them in trucks and tortured them to this day. Now I'm going to tell you a very strange story. I sent out my yesterday I sent out a picture of the book cover and an article pushing this Bye Bye Gaza, that there was only one complaint, and I sent it to like 3,000 people. The one complaint said, take me off your list, I never want to talk to you again, and that one complaint came from a woman who is organizing the Gaza Charities of Israel. She's getting Gaza children to make handicrafts, and she's selling them to other settlers. They can't believe that they were picked on in such a cruel, disgusting way by the establishment of Israel. They still don't understand that everyone who supposedly was their ally was working against them. And I'm talking the rabbis, you're talking Shlomo, I forgot his name. It doesn't matter, it'll come back. The fact is the rabbis were telling the people of Gush Katif not to fight back because a miracle was going to save them. The political people, Itamar Ben-Gavir of Kach, were sent to Gush Katif to get rid of all the protests, to show the world that this was a war between Arabs and Jews. Everyone they thought was their ally was a government agent. And that's what this book is about. The fact of the matter is the wonderful kids from Yesha, 200,000 of them, were being sent from rally to rally like little puppets, because the rallies were far from Gush Katif and would do nothing to save Gush Katif.
All right, let's hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Barry Shemesh, and we're talking about his latest book, Bye Bye Gaza. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and for any of our guests who do not understand Gush Katif, why, this is where the settlement was in Gaza. This was an area south of the rest of Israel. It separated certainly by a part of the West Bank, and here was this group of a couple of thousand Israelis that had set up actually an area where they were producing, they had greenhouses, they were producing food. It was a wonderful thing. It was an amazing accomplishment that they were able to go there, and some of them had been there for 40 or 50 years, you know, that, and they were producing fruits and vegetables and, you know, exporting them all over the world. It was a very successful settlement. But, of course, the idea was, well, we're just going to turn this over to the Palestinians, and then we can have peace in Israel. If we just give up more land, why, we can have peace in Israel. Well, these people had been there. How long have some of those people lived there, Barry?
They were there for 35 years. And, again, when you say peace in Israel, you have to be nuts to believe that. Now, we're dealing with an issue that is beyond our understanding right now. And by the way, that UFO book may actually increase our understanding of the hocus-pocus that was pushed on Israel. Nobody, but nobody, believed that pulling out of Gaza was going to lead to a thriving agricultural community of Palestinian Arabs. What everyone said came true, that it became a shooting ground for rockets into Sderot and Ashkelon. Look, this is not a simple concept, and I'm not a simple writer, it turns out. What I saw was so clear-cut to me in every respect, and that includes the UFOs, too, that real people were reporting on this stuff. They weren't lying to me, and they were supplying me with the highest level of information you can imagine. And by the way, the UFO book has over 60 pictures. I supplied 60 illustrations for this book. So if you want to see UFOs in Israel and the proofs, I've done a good job on it. And then you have what you just said. We're going to pull out of Gaza and bring peace. You cannot believe, nobody would believe that it's going to bring peace.
But that was the excuse that was given.
It's not even an excuse. What happened in Gaza, number one, the only people who really didn't believe it, well, not the only people, but the ones that were protesting the most, were the settler kids. These kids don't watch TV. They're not getting the dose of tremendous propaganda that I guess the rest of the kids of Israel are getting. All I know is that they were little, itty-bitty, worthless little puppets to the establishment of Israel, who infiltrated and completely corrupted their leadership. And I wrote that the Yesha Council was sending everybody into traps to make sure Gush Katif goes down. I wrote there was a massacre of Arabs by a Jew the day before the evacuation, on purpose, or the week before, I'm sorry, a few days before, that was Zada. Everything I wrote was true, that's number one. But more to the point, I spoke to these kids. I was there in giving speeches. And up to the final days of the evacuation, I snuck into Gush Katif. I said I had a cousin there. He phoned up the Border Patrol for me to give a speech in Neve Dekalim to over 100 people. I told them everything. They wouldn't listen. I said to them, what are you people doing letting the army into Gush Katif for? They're your enemy. They're going to pull you out of here in a few days.
Hold that thought, Barry.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is really talking about the tragic situation in Gush Katif when actually the Israeli army was sent in to take Israeli citizens and force them from their homes so they could really, of course, destroy this whole, the massive settlement there that had been there for 35 years. It was so productive, and of course, about 2,000 people were forcibly removed from their homes so they could turn this over to the Palestinians, so they could use this as a base for shooting their rockets into Israel. And it should have been so obvious that you were going to have peace. You were turning over a strategic piece of real estate to your enemies who were sworn to destroy you. Now, this just doesn't make sense.
Not only does it not make sense, the background to this stuff, Ariel Sharon did the dirty deed because he was the prime minister the people most trusted, supposedly because he was right-wing. I've proven that lie I've proven many times in my other books. And then he was knocked off like Kim Johnson. When you need to get rid of a senator, you just give him what I had, some sort of stroke in your head. Okay, so they got rid of Sharon, and in comes Olmert and Peres. They're all coming in on Gush Katif. They're all plotting and planning the end of religious Judaism. And by the way, in the book, I spend an enormous amount of time on Daniel Abraham and Stephen Cohen and all the gang of crooks in America who have made American Jews no factor whatsoever in Israeli politics. They're gone. They're out of it. That's also in the book. The whole plot is a very complicated plot. Getting rid of Gaza took all the resources of the New World Order of Israel till they got rid of it, and my book covers the depth of the corruption, the crooks who did it, and they're still in power. Now, I'm going to go forward, if you want, to what a marvelous week this was. Are you ready?
Go right ahead.
Now, last year I put out a CD. Not even last year. We put it out in February. It was called The Vatican's New Crusade for Jerusalem. By the way, your engineer, George Forfa, has reproduced these for me. When I can't get to a place to do it, he's been extremely, extremely good to me, so I thought I'd thank him. I have a CD that outlined word for word what happened this week. Now, the first thing that happens, and come on, what a wonderful little boy is Henry Kissinger. I mean, there is a little boy that deserves to be made a papal advisor because of all his great knowledge of Catholic liturgy. He is now the advisor to the Pope.
You know, that is the most incredible thing. And where is why doesn't anybody ask, why would the Pope have Henry Kissinger, of all people, as a personal advisor to
Well, we know why.
Well, we know why, but the average individual doesn't understand.
To bring in Olmert to get rid of the old city of Jerusalem.
Sure. And then, of course, what they really want to do is get the Catholic Church in there, don't they?
They are getting the Catholic Church in there. Now, Kissinger is made a papal advisor. Olmert decides he's going to see the Pope 2 days later. Okay? He made a decision, I'm going to see the Pope. The CFR and the Vatican are working hand in hand, as I said they would, to make darn sure that Mount Zion, or the parts of it that they consider extremely important right now, are in the hands of the Vatican. This year, they don't want to wait anymore. If Olmert says no, well, you were going to remind him what happened when they sent Katsav, the president, to do the same job last year, and look at the mess he's in today. And Olmert's a lot more corrupt than Katsav ever was. But there's more to it. Just before Olmert arrived, the Spanish, Italians, and the French offered to send their troops to replace the IDF in Gaza. No more Israel Defense Forces in Gaza. They will do the same functions that they're doing in southern Lebanon. And Olmert said that sounds like a great idea. Then the leaks came, and what did Olmert discuss with the Pope? The Vatican wants Mount Zion, and the Vatican wants its Catholic European soldiers replacing the IDF in Gaza. Whoa, that's a meeting. Ehud has quite a meeting there. The whole thing is coming down. Now, what did Olmert do right after the meeting? The first thing he does, he goes on German TV, and he completely panicking. The guy is thoroughly panicking, and he tells the world that Israel has got lots of nukes. No prime minister is supposed to do a thing like that, by the way. But it doesn't matter. He says, we can take care of ourselves. We've got the weapons to do it. Olmert now is losing his cool. He's not only a terrible prime minister. Whatever happened with the Vatican and Kissinger has just shot him over the edge.
Well, I think they know exactly what they're doing. And this thing is a very bad omen for his stability there.
What omen? Israel's
hold on,
Pope.
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I guess it's Barry Shamish, who's certainly a Jewish patriot who's trying to save his country, and that the leaders are intent upon destroying it. Of course, certainly Barry is simply pointing out that this last week, for the first time, an Israeli official, Olmert, has announced to the world, we do have nuclear weapons. Now everybody thinks, oh, it was a slip of the tongue. It wasn't a slip of the tongue. It was given for a specific reason. Do you think that they were trying to say, well, if you try to get tough with us and you keep doing what you're doing, or you launch a war on us, we'll retaliate with nuclear weapons? Is that what he's saying?
That's the last resort of Israel. That's all Israel has left. And it always was the last resort. And, you know, a lot of people are wondering, after the Lebanon War this summer, when Haifa and Tiberia and Tzfat were all abandoned for 34 days, where was that threat? Where did the nukes go? And a lot of people opened their mouth that maybe this nuclear Israel was all big fallacy. Well, Olmert opened his mouth and said it's not a fallacy, and he knows Israel's toast. Israel cannot survive the Vatican troops on Lebanon, can't survive them in Gaza. That's choking the country in two. But most of all, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, the PLO pour out their missiles from Ramallah and show them on international TV. They've got missiles all through the West Bank. Once you've got them in the West Bank, you just shoot them into the airport 5 miles away. You shoot them into Tel Aviv 20 miles away. Israel can't survive a missile war. And frankly, the only thing that they can safely do is probably nuke Tehran, which is, you know, let me add something to that. There's the stupidest call I've ever heard for America to take out the Iranian nuclear program. The Air Force will take care of it. The Iranian nuclear program is 300 feet under the ground. No Air Force is going to take care of it. People are just acting crazy and they're saying stupid things. This is from the Jerusalem Post. You had a writer, Michael Freund. It says, Christians, pray to your president to take out the Iranian threat with your air force. You may as well send paper airplanes to drop paper bombs. The Iranians aren't stupid enough to repeat the Iraqi mistake. Let's just put it very, very bluntly. Nobody knows what they're talking about. Nobody. The fact is that Israel is in enormous trouble right now. Enormous trouble. Baker is the kind of guy who would say to the Saudis, it won't take long. We've got the Israeli people absolutely insane now. They've decided to let
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Okay. Around.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Christian Barry is suggesting that it's going to be almost impossible for the Air Force, American Air Force, or the Israeli Air Force, to take out the Iranian facilities, which are buried several hundred feet down to the ground. You just can't drop bombs that deep, you know, in to take out the Iranian facilities. Israel is being put into an impossible situation. I mean, Israel is surrounded on the south by Hamas, who wants to destroy it, on the north by Hezbollah, that wants to destroy it. Certainly Syria to the east wants to destroy it. Jordan, you know, it's certainly equivocal, but a push comes to shove, why they'll go along with the Arab radicals, and then there's Saudi Arabia just waiting in the wings, and Egypt, certainly the south of Hamas, certainly taking weapons in there to fire at Israel. Israel is in a situation where there is no logical way that Israel is going to be able to survive. Now, I really believe that one way or other, God's going to intervene here, but it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. Now, we're moving towards the climax, and especially now that the Vatican is going to be moving into Mount Zion, and they're going to begin bringing in the Catholic troops. So you pick up the story, Barry.
Yeah, listeners, visit the BarryChamish.com, and that's the, my name, BarryChamish, website.com, to get a little of the latest information. It's going so fast, and I can't type fast enough, but the fact is that where did the missiles and the West Bank come from? If Jordan isn't allowing them to cross over its territory, where did they come from? Now, what's going on is the Egyptians are at war with Israel. They're an open war. If they wanted Hamas not to have Qassam rockets or explosives, they would not allow their Sinai Desert to be used for smuggling them. They would simply put a stop to it. It's that simple. Egypt is now at war by proxy. Now, the old Israel would have sent a message to Mubarak and said, "You're killing us. If we die, the Aswan Dam is nuked. You've got a 50-foot wave of water burying your whole country. Put a stop to it." That was the old Israel. The old Israel played hardball. The new Israel allows itself to die, and that is the leadership of Israel. And if you don't buy, forget, if you want to know about the leadership of Israel, forget the return of the giants. That's the very spiritual and profound and evil background leadership. The real leadership is in Bye-Bye Gaza. They're trying to destroy Israel on purpose. And if people don't understand that there is something called Sabbatean or Frankist Judaism. No, take out the word Judaism. They don't use the word. We use the word. We call them Frankist Jews. They should be called Frankists or Sabbateans. They hate Judaism. They founded Israel. They founded Israel to be an anti-Torah state. The religious have won. The religious formed a magnificent community in Gush Katif. It was a model for the whole world, so it had to be destroyed. That's what happened in Gaza. I just summed up my book, but there are 10 chapters and about 300 pages, so there's a lot more in there.
All right, fine. Of course, for our leaders out there, you can actually look up in your encyclopedia and learn all about the Sabbateans, which you're never going to hear about in school, which you're never going to hear about in the anti-communist or the conservative movements. Nobody ever talks about the Sabbateans, except, of course, Rabbi Adelman and Barry and a few other people who are aware of this movement within the Judaism, which is not Judaism at all. It has an intense hatred for Judaism. So go ahead, Barry.
You have to understand, I had a fight this week with a very nice person who I plugged on your show once, Tamar Yona. She thinks the UFO stuff is damaging me, and she may not have me on the show if I keep up with UFO. I wrote her back. I said, "Where do you get off with this? I don't lie. There was a book, and I'm tired of covering it up because I need the money. I'm in the United States. Okay, I have no job. I wrote this book. Let me sell it. What do you want from me?" And you've got this problem in Israel. They look for ways out. They won't face the fact that, at a minimum, mothers should be preparing to send their children away to America. Just keep their children out of the next war. There are things that actually have to be done to prevent what looks like a Holocaust coming. Nobody's doing any of them. You've got an organization out there, Nefesh B'Nefesh, who's actually trying to get Aliyah to Israel, to immigration. I'm telling them, this isn't the time. This is the worst time to bring people into the country. Nobody is facing the real Israel. Nobody. And by the way, if we want to talk about Christians and Messianics, I mean, they've created Disneyland Israel. It's so far from reality, it's just unbelievable. You've got the Haggis and people pushing Israel to attack Iran. Okay, actually, we can't even hold off against Hezbollah, and they want us to attack Iran. The fact is there is an Israel dying. The fact is that Israel has to change. It has to throw out its leadership. It needs a military coup. It needs a few tanks to surround the Knesset and throw them all off. Because, frankly, this leadership is going to destroy Israel, and probably within months, if things go, even within months, if things go bad enough with the Vatican.
Well, let's get back then. Where do the UFOs fit into this whole thing? Because, of course, I personally think this is a fascinating aspect of this that nobody talks about, and that is the spiritual forces. Because what do you think the UFOs really represent, Barry?
Well, I know this. There were UFOs. The most famous one in 1987 was at Chicmona Beach. Three UFOs landed and left their marks on the sand. If you can imagine burning your imprint in the sand, that's what they did. This was 100 meters only from Jeremiah. Not Jeremiah. Who's the prophet who left in a whirlpool? Elijah's tomb. This was 100 kilometers from a very, very famous biblical tomb. A lot of the incidents happened at biblical sites. I don't know truly if these are in any way the sites described in the Bible. I'm not going to go through, there were enough of them. Ezekiel's wheels are just one of many, many sites in the Bible that are, even the rabbis don't need, it was a symbol. He was describing something in symbology. These are not good, these are not good explanations for a lot of the things in the Bible. I know what happened, in 1993. There's a coincidence of timing that I think may be the key to this whole thing. The giants arrived when Israel was sold away, when Israel died. When the signing of Israel away took place, they were in Israel. And again, maybe it is all just a coincidence. You decide by the book. I make no such statement, by the way. All I do is report the facts.
Well, you know, of course, Barry, I believe that, of course, there really are demonic forces. I believe there's another dimension. I believe, of course, the UFO manifestation is a symbol of this other dimension. I believe that these things are truly manifestations of demonic beings that bridge this gap between the reality that we live in and the supernatural sphere, which I believe a lot of this real battle that was being fought today is being fought in. I believe that the people who are intent upon bringing about this one world order are really carrying out the instructions that come from the dark side. There's always been this desire to create a one world government.
Did you see who was sitting on the Iranian board? Do you know who Lee Hamilton is?
Sure, I do.
Lee Hamilton chaired the famous Congress on the October surprise. If you recall that, they released the hostages after Reagan was elected. It was called the October surprise. He was the one who covered that up.
Sure, well,
James Baker, I won't even go into, but I'll tell you this. He has been telling his Saudi friends for many years that we're going to get rid of Israel for you. Just be patient. We have to make the people crazy first. You have got yourself now in the United States. All the forces that despise Israel are now the official government. Every one of them are from the Council on Foreign Relations. Every one of them.
Because Lee Hamilton was the vice chairman of the 911 Commission. He was a long-time member of the Trilateral Commission, as well as being a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, although he's not on the current list of the Trilateral Commission. He was from about 1992 to a year 2002.
If you're on you may as well stay on.
Beg your pardon?
If you're on once, you may as well stay on.
Sure. He's part of one of the major manipulators behind the scenes, and nobody's ever going to tell the American people he is part of this cabal that rules the world.
Now, this gets worse because after they release their findings, in the little news I have here, CNN, everyone is praising this honest group. And everyone is saying that Bush, the president, is delaying and dawdling. That's not what happened. The Iraqi study group found a way forward to destroy Israel. And by the way, the fact that Olmert and Peres named their party Forward, Kadima, had some amusing, maybe coincidence, maybe not, background, but that report wasn't about Iraq. It said nothing about Iraq, if you want to look at it. But its consequences for Israel are the end of the Israeli state and in a mighty big hurry. Who ever heard of negotiating Israel's borders without Israel being in the same room?
It is really incredible, and of course the average person here in America today has no grasp of what's going on. They don't realize, of course, that James Baker III is certainly one of the is deeply involved with the occult. He was actually the vice chairman of Gorbachev's State of the World Forum. He took George Shultz's place on this truly occult organization. So
these are very, very high-level people who really, really know each other. Now, when you start getting that group together and you know a little history, you don't need a lot. You would have had a major scandal back in, I believe it was 82. The October surprise was when Reagan came to power.
That was
interesting. The next day, the hostages were all released, and the surprise was to delay the release of the hostages once we got rid of Carter, I believe. I may be getting this one wrong. I'm sorry if I am. But there would have been a major scandal, but Lee Hamilton made sure no one ever heard of the October surprise ever again. And this is who you appoint when you need a major, major cover-up on Iraq. The Iraq War, I want you to know, I don't know who to root for. I can't decide who to root. Do you root for the New World Order of George Bush? Or do you want the Arab insurgents? It's Stalin on one hand and Hitler on the other, and we're watching this like this is reality. This is the reality they created for us, and we're stuck with it.
Well, we're only stuck with it if we continue to allow them to continue playing this game. So what we need to do is, of course, expose how they got us into this horrible mess, and it was obviously very intentional. I mean, the American military is very, very efficient. I mean, they wanted adequate troops to go into Iraq to be able to occupy Iraq. Rumsfeld wouldn't give them to them, and then, of course, they took Iraq within just a couple of weeks. They were in total control, and then they send Paul Bremer over there, Henry Kissinger's friend, who dissolves the Iraqi army and the Iraqi police force and the Iraqi civil service and creates the chaos that we have today.
Absolutely.
And steadfastly refuses to rebuild an Iraqi army that will be functional. We've had 3.5 years to rebuild the Iraqi army, and what's accomplished? Why, of course, half of the people there are part of the terrorist cells that are going around killing people.
No one has explained precisely where the arms are coming from and how the insurgents work and so forth. I've never heard that. Look, the core of the issue is the New World Order takes over the Middle East. Now, this is not the time for this show, but I spoke with the person who arranged the Oslo Accords, Ron Pundak. This was supposed to happen. I wrote a book in 97, Traitors and Carpetbaggers in the Promised Land. I said the idea of Oslo from his own mouth is that the Middle East dissolves, there are no countries left, and it's a giant trading bloc. This is what these people actually are trying to do. And by the way, it's in bye-bye Gaza. I'm pushing this very hard. In the old days, I could publish a book and sell it. I'm trapped in a place that the electricity goes off when there aren't floods. I mean, it's really scary, this place, how many natural disasters there are. I can't put up books anymore. I can sell CDs because they're on DVDs and so forth, which I do, including the Vatican one. But I can't send. The mail is too expensive. Everything is too expensive. I can't do anything but put it on lulu.com.
All right, well, Barry, let's get your website out. Let's get your number where people can buy your CDs or your DVDs, where they can get that information. So at least maybe you can get a little help financially.
Well, that's very kind of you. Look, the best way to buy the only way to buy the new books, but also Save Israel, Shabtai Tzvi, and Israel Betrayed, you go to lulu.com, type in my name and there are the books. And you can download them for real cheap, as a matter of fact. If you want to buy CDs, just write me at my email address, Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at NetVision, that's one long word, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N, .net, N-E-T dot I-L, Chamish at NetVision.net.il. Website is the Barry Chamish website.com. That'll take care of everything.
All right, fine. Just give it one more time. You've done enough radio, you know, you have to always repeat everything. One more time.
Lulu.com, get most of my books. The books you don't have, or if you actually want the books autographed, you have to pay $10 Canadian, and I'll send any book you want autographed right to your door. You can write me, Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at NetVision, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N, .net, N-E-T dot I-L. And the website is the Barry Chamish website.com. But the new book, Bye Bye Gaza, please get it. It's, well, what can I tell you? It's absolutely up to date, telling you how that Israel will be destroyed. And quite frankly, I don't think there will be another book on Israel. I don't think there will be an Israel long enough to write another book. And by the way, I'm going to add something I always add. Hanukkah was my favorite time of year with my family. I would buy presents for my kids. This year I ship them things. It's not the same anymore.
Well, I think, Barry, I know it's discouraging seeing what you're seeing, but I don't think God's going to allow these wicked people to destroy Israel. I think they want to destroy Israel, but I think that one way or another we're going to see some sort of an intervention there. At least I hope and pray that'll be the case.
Then there's the other alternative where the Arab armies pound down the apartment doors of Israel and rape your relatives and your children and shoot their husbands so they can't intervene. Look, there is another alternative out there too, and it's so disgusting I can't even think of it, but it's there too.
Well, are you suggesting that they'll use the nuclear or the Samson option?
No, no, it won't make a difference. The Arabs, if they win, if they smell Israel defeated, they couldn't care less. They'll sacrifice cities to get Israel out of the way. They revel in death. They have, and don't forget this. This is also heavily New World Order, stressing the Sharia side of Islam, and putting the mullahs in power. Islam loves death. They celebrate death. A nuke to them to destroy Israel is just a thing that happens when you destroy Israel.
Well, I think we're moving into some very difficult times. I think the average American has no idea what lies ahead. You hang on. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program with our friend Barry Shemesh. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I don't know what you can say, but it's Hanukkah. It's a holiday where the Maccabees destroyed the Hellenic Syrians. I don't know if we're going to have another Hanukkah again, but I think there's some irony, and I wish people would think about it. I produced this week the quotation from the departing head of the Asia Council, that everything done to those protesting the destruction of Gush Katif was a sham and a scam. I produced it so people can read it. The people of Yehuda and Shamron, Judea and Samaria, have got to understand one thing. They cannot trust anyone in power. They have to take matters into their own hands and forget people they consider their leaders. They will be disappointed by every single one of them. That's the lesson of Bye-Bye Gaza. Everyone they trusted turned out to be on the other side. And by the way, congratulations, Sabbatai and Israel. It was a brilliant plot. You destroyed the army. Religious Jews aren't proud to be in that army. They're ashamed to wear the uniform. This was my uniform. I was very proud to be in the IDF. I wouldn't be able to wear that uniform today. How could you wear a uniform with someone who takes Jews out of their homes and tortures them? This is, and I mean torture, they're still living in utter squalor. Their children are all heavily on drugs. This was what was done to the Jews of Gush Katif. Oh, my. All I can say is we need one more Hanukkah, and it better be this year. If not, well, maybe this Israel wasn't meant to be.
Well, you know, the thing between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. I'm sure the wicked people are intent upon destroying Israel. But I think God has a purpose behind it. I don't know what that is. I certainly don't think that I'm smart enough to understand, but I believe that Israel is there for a purpose, even though it may have very well been put there by the Sabbatai and the Jews, these people who are not Jews at all, but have this intense hatred of Israel, as you've described. But it's going to be interesting to see as this thing begins to unfold. You and I are not going to change this, but all we can do is hope that the people out there in the listening audience will heed your warning, will get your information, and help us to disseminate it across the country. There's growing anti-Semitism here in the United States. And let me tell you that you are being manipulated, and so many good people, are firmly convinced the Holocaust didn't take place right along with Ahmadinejad. We live in a world gone mad. God bless you. Thanks so much, Barry.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program with Barry. And remember, we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and historical battlefield. And if you're looking to man to solve the problems, he's doing a pretty poor job of it. But, of course, God does have a plan. He knows what's going to happen. We're called to do our best and to warn people. We're to be the watchman of the wall, as described in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33. All we can do is sound the trumpet, sound the alarm, and hope that people will heed. And I do believe that there's a growing awareness out there. You know, I do what I do because I do believe that there is hope. The only hope that we have, of course, is that the good people will come to understand what's going on and will be worthy of God's intervention. And so our message to you is understand what's going on. Understand the spiritual forces that are at work within our own country. And you'll find that described well in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. The book, the audio tape, the video, they all tell the same story. We have it in DVD as well. And then, of course, the other material available from Radio Liberty. Books like, of course, Hope of the Wicked by Ted Flynn. Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, which you can get along with his four-tape set. The Beautiful Side of Evil by Joanna Michelson, and of course you get our interviews with her on the supernatural, and of course we have a four-tape set on this, and you begin to understand that there really is another dimension. We have a great book. It's called Alien Intervention. It talks about UFOs, and we, of course, try to get you to understand that there really is this supernatural element. That is what the UFOs really manifesting, is an example of the other dimension that is there. The UFOs are real, but I believe they're demonic. And until you understand that there is this other dimension, you can't understand anything going on. It reminds me of the email I got from a witch one time, who was furious with me because I'd said something about witchcraft, and I was talking about Luciferianism as well. I wasn't trying to infer that they were the same, and she was telling me that she was a white witch. She wasn't a black witch like those bad white witches. She was a white witch. But, of course, after all, they had their rituals, and they cast their spells. They were just trying to get in touch with the beings from the other dimension. They were just trying to get in touch with the beings from the other dimension. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there is another dimension you can tap into, but you do so at the risk of your souls. If you haven't yet seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. That's they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, you need to get it. You need to get the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. You need to get Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. You need to get Pastor Joe Schimmel's latest video, The Da Vinci Con, which will take you into the Gnostic message that is in so many of the movies that come out of Hollywood today. And most people don't even know what Gnosticism is. Well, you'll know after you, of course, have seen this excellent DVD, The Da Vinci Con, the Da Vinci Code, but The Da Vinci Con. So remember our numbers, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and then our website is RadioLiberty.com. The Middle East is on the verge of going up in a sheet of flame. Israel is surrounded on the south by Hamas and Egypt. Both are intent upon their destruction. On the north by Hezbollah and Syria to the east. And then, of course, Iran and Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, they're all intent upon destroying Israel. It's got a box of tinder, and somebody's striking a match. This is going to happen, and happen very quickly. Whether it be a matter of weeks or months, I don't know, but we're heading towards an increased confrontation in the Middle East. We're heading towards a war in the Middle East. It's going to have a profound impact here. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray that people will return to our Lord and understand what's going on. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Stock.